Well, I don't know whether this next story is really about a food revolution, but it certainly speaks to the power of food. Michelle Winner, our Americas correspondent, virtually attended a media conference on behalf of the show last week in Portland, Oregon, at which the World Food Travel Association released its 2016 Food Travel Monitor Report, the world's largest research study on the subject, and it's on the future of food and beverage tourism, which it says is bright. For more information, we have one of the presenters, Roberta Garibaldi, who's in Italy, and she's on the line, and Michelle Winner is also on the line in Oregon, USA. Well, I have on the line with me today our Americas correspondent, Michelle Winner, who is on the West Coast, and it's quite late at night there. And in turn, we have Roberta Garibaldi, who's in Italy. And I'm sorry, Roberta, but it's very early morning there for you, isn't it?
Yes, it's 7 in the morning, but I'm here, very happy to be here with you.
Well, hopefully it's a nice summer's day. It's a very cold winter's day here in Melbourne.
Oh, yes. Here it's 30 degrees, and so we are...
Oh, well, good to be up early, Roberta. Mm-hmm. Now, Michelle, you attended the virtual press conference for the World Food Tourism Association.
Can
you
Travel Association. Sorry. Yes, World Food Travel Association.
So let me get that right. Maybe you could just give us a bit of an overview about the event, and then we'll hear some specific thoughts from Roberta, who, of course, is representing the Italian angle in this association. So tell us about the event, Michelle.
Well, the conference featured three, I guess they were tourism and culinary tourism representatives that are members of the World Food Travel Association. There's Miss Roberta, and there was a John McCauley from Ireland, and Christina, and I'm not going to murder her last name, I promise not to. Her last name is Hietasaari, and she represented Finland. And so I found the conference quite interesting because their comments were, some of them, not what I would think. Finland said that there was a survey done, and she, well, I'll get back to that later, but let me just tell you what WFTA is. It's a nonprofit, non-governmental organization, and it purports to be the world's leading authority on food tourism. It's based in Portland, Oregon, and I've known about it for years. I've been a friend of the executive director, Eric Wolf, and he's really grown this thing from the very first few conferences that I attended into something really quite interesting and focused just on culinary travel. But, of course, that also means wine and spirits as well. So they were announcing, this was a media conference, the largest food tourism study ever conducted. And they had the research conducted by Matthew Stone and Stephen Biggatz, and it was quite interesting and unlike any other reports they'd done before. Prior to this, a report would probably be data from a sampling of food journals. I know Marilyn Hill was involved in it one year, but this time, this survey was done very professionally, and they wanted to form a baseline study, so it's very important that they got the data.
And what was what's the bottom line? I think they were saying that it's a bright future for food tourism. Was that their sort of overarching statement?
That's right. Their overall finding is that the leisure travelers are intentionally participating in unique and memorable food and beverage activities while traveling.
So they're not just running off to McDonald's.
That's true. That's true. And I know Roberta can put some more information on ground level from her personal experiences and her data. But I don't think this is a shock to us who write about food and travel. Is it to you?
To me? No. I think people do seem to make choices of destination based on a range of things. And obviously accommodation's one, but food is increasingly an important part of it. Would Roberta agree with that?
Yes, surely. We can see this all over the world. We analyze 11 countries, and so we analyze that everywhere we have this increase. And I collected the data for Italy, and so I have my specific angle, and I can see that in Italy too, the report provides research clearly shows that Italy is one of the most popular destinations among visitors from all over the world, and that we have for example, the 92 of Italian respondents participated in a culinary activity while traveling. And we can see that we have the 49% all over the world of travelers that experienced one travel in the last 2 years where they were motivated about food. And so it's very important to have this information. Because we thought that it was a part that was not so big, but 49% is really a lot.
Yes, that does sound like a lot. Roberta, within Italy, are there certain destinations that are clearly food-focused for visitors? Mm-hmm. What would they be?
Yes, we have some areas of Italy that are really focused on it. We have some Emilia-Romagna, Piemonte, Langhero e Monferrato, and Tuscany. And so these are areas that are really focused on this. And I am responsible of a project that is called Lombardy, East Lombardy, European Region of Gastronomy 2017. And so Lombardy too, so we are Lake Garda and the area that surround Lake Garda are focusing a lot on this, especially for 2017.
Well, that's okay. Wonderful news. I think our radio show needs to go over there, Graham.
Yeah, yes, obviously it does. Roberta, do you know if there's any Southern Hemisphere countries involved in the study?
Sorry, in the Southern?
Yes, in the Southern Hemisphere or just the Northern Hemisphere?
In the Southern Hemisphere, I think, no, we don't have. We have 11, we have India and...
Ireland. Mexico, Germany, France, China, and Australia, Spain, United Kingdom, and US.
Did you say Austria, yeah. Austria, or Australia?
Australia.
So Australia is involved?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I wonder what they said about us then. We
okay.
do.
And next year we'll do some new countries because next year we wanted to do a bigger research and so to go all over other countries. Yes, we have information about Australia too, yes.
Ah, well, that's a bonus. I'm pleased to hear that. I did get invited to participate in the conference, so maybe Eric found out about us down here. I don't know. What was the... was there any sort of surprises, Michelle, in what you heard from everybody who participated in the overall scheme of things?
Well, as I mentioned, Christina before from Finland... She was. She said that the data gathered in the report helps her to know that the cuisine of her country, despite Finland's efforts so far, is still largely unknown outside of her country. And she found that a little bit disparaging because they apparently focused on promotion, but will try harder. So I think it's a constructive thing.
I have to confess, I couldn't tell you what the national dish of Finland was. I assume it's fish.
She showed some beautiful photographs of and called it an Arctic sourced cuisine because they have pure water, clean air, and 24 hours of sunshine in season. So they grow beautiful berries, vegetables, and she said it's not only a reindeer on your plate. So.
Oh, okay. And Ireland, apart from Guinness, stout, I wonder what do they call, what's the major cuisine in Ireland?
You know, Roberta, you probably know better than I. Did you want to answer this one?
In Ireland, we have Galway will be in 2018, a European region of gastronomy, Galway in Ireland. And they have a very good project and to valorize their gastronomy. And so they have a lot of fish and ship, and they are really they are working very, very well, and I think that is could be very interesting to speak with them to analyze their offer. And I can see that in Italy we have something that with Spain and France is a little bit different from the other countries, because culinary activities appear to be slightly less important than beverage ones when choosing a destination. So in Italy, for example, we have only 21 culinary travels of all the respondents, while beverage travelers are 58%. And so we have our strong tradition about wine, that we have an offer that is really specialized on this. And so Italians, too, are very go often to see wine cellars, root of wine. And so we have we prefer a little bit to go to see these things instead of culinary travel.
Okay. I think Australians understand that. We're pretty good at the drinking side and getting better at the eating side.
Yes.
So, Roberta, you're part of a university, aren't you?
Yes, I'm University of Bergamo, yes.
Okay, and so did you use the resources of the university to do some of this research? Is that the level at which the research has been produced?
In this case, I did the research with the World Food Travel Association, but we use the same methodology, and so it's with the University of California, and so it was three-end work: World Food Travel, University of California, and us in this case as a World Food Travel Association.
So, will you continue to do this research?
Yes, we'll continue next year, and so we are defining. Surely, the first step is to have to analyze other countries, and so this year these 11 countries, and some other next year, and we are thinking about a new focus, perhaps on technology for next year.
On technology, that'd be interesting. Yeah. Is that technology in the manufacturer, or where does the technology fit in the food chain?
Technology, and we like to analyze how the technology is involved now with the customers. And so, for example, the app for to reserve a table, to have some suggestion to choose the travel, and so on. So the technology for the customers.
Okay. Well, that's
I wanted to cut in. I think that's really key. And someone, I held a 4th of July party last night at my house, and someone told me they were visiting, they were Australians, and their Uber driver told them all the best places to eat in Portland, Oregon, where I am. But the best part was Uber used technology to tell them, based on where they were going to in the car, it sent them a thing on their phone that showed them where to eat, and all these choices came up. And I think that technology is a huge point. It's a great idea.
Yeah, we have that here.
In the research, we saw that a lot of people during the holiday where to go, and so not before. And so it's very important to have up-to-date information during the travel. And so it's important to have a good connection, Wi-Fi, and some information that are available by mobile phone. It's very important to drive the customer.
Do you have apps like Urban Spoon and Yelp? Do you know them, Michelle or Roberta? Have you heard of those?
Oh, we have Yelp, but we don't care much for it here in Portland, Oregon.
Well, it's probably better out of your own town, I think. But I've used it just driving up the highway between Melbourne and Sydney to find a nice little place to stop. And it's a bit of a desert, culinary desert, between Melbourne, along the highway. It's not that spectacular. But we found a really interesting little restaurant that a lot of people had gone to, and we went there, and sure enough, it was just as they said, and it was actually quite heartwarming to think that, you know, you could stop. Otherwise, you're stopping at petrol stations and eating fast food, you know, but we got a really nice meal, so that was good. I noticed in the report, Michelle, And Roberta, that one of the lines was, we spend based on passion, not on income. How important was that?
Go ahead, Roberta. I have a comment, but go right ahead.
You can please give
okay.
your...
Well, that was not a part of the official comments, but it's my comments from the conference.
Yeah.
And so these came from the executive director, Eric Wolf. So he sort of summed it up. We spend based on passion, not on our income level. And so there was a factoid here. Culinary travelers prioritize spending on food and beverage, directing about 50% more of their budget to these items than non-culinary travelers.
Right.
Which, yeah. Says
yeah.
everything.
Yeah, it's interesting. I noticed recently a report that one of the emerging trends was not only for people to try food. This is maybe if they're Westerners, then this might be in a foreign country to them. In other words, not Western cuisine. But it wasn't just about going to a local restaurant and trying something different, some of the native foods. It was actually going to a home and sharing the food of the locals in their home. And, you know, you recompense them for it just like you would at a restaurant. But this was an experience that's growing in popularity in certain places in South America, for example, was what I was reading about. Have you heard anything about that, or is the association more interested in the commercial venture?
We asked this all over the world, and we saw that is a trend that we can see everywhere. And so there is a lot of people interested about this in all over the world. So it's increasing. And so it's important, I think, to analyze this trend and to understand that the social aspect is very important for tourists, and so perhaps a restaurant has to think about this to do something different, because to offer the same in the restaurant, because I don't know in your world, but here in Italy now we have a lot of problems. We know that it's important to respect the work. For example, we have in a hotel with bed and breakfast, Airbnb, and so on. It's now we are speaking a lot about this, and so it's important to give to who respect official work good opportunities. And so I think that the restaurant has to think a lot about this and has to renew their offer in a little bit to satisfy this need.
It's a little bit like the sharing economy is affecting accommodation, it's affecting transportation. And now this seems like the services side of the industry is affected by this idea that, you know, the sharing economy is an important thing to participate in. It's more an experience than simply going and having a meal.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have a question for you, Roberta, because I didn't find any more data available at the conference, and it said younger people are driving spending. Gen Xers and millennials are much more concerned with food and beverage than older travelers. This creates a positive future for F&B industry and certainly destination and hospitality marketers. Do you have any idea why that's so? Maybe I'm just too close to writing about food and searching out good food, so I have to recuse myself from answering this question, because that's high on my list when I go to a destination. So why wouldn't it be for other people my age? I'm older. I'm 60.
Yes. We saw this and in some other research of this year, we saw the same data. And so that millennials are really interested in food. I think that could be all the activities that we did in a lot of part of the world were done in the schools, and a lot of work on the media and on TV show and so on, that we have an attention that is grown in the last 5 years. in everybody, but especially in the young. And so I think it's very important for the future, because we can see that this culinary travel is a trend that increased in the last year, but we can say that it will be more and more strong in next years, because millennials are very interested, and we saw that there is a lot of interest in China and India, that are countries so important for the future of tourism. And so we these two elements with these two elements, we can say that in the future we'll see a more strong culinary travel.
Well, we've run out of time, unfortunately. I could go on chatting about this for quite some time. We might check back in with you both in 12 months' time when the next report comes out, because I think it is quite fascinating, and clearly Melbourne, as the venue for next year's World's 50 Best Restaurants, for the announcement at least, we're very interested in it down here, and I'm really pleased that Australia is part of this World Food Travel Association. We need to get more active.
We hope that next year our Bottura, that this year was the first chef in the world, will be the same for next year, and so that will be there to,
we'll
to say how is good, because Bottura Italian restaurant, Italian chef, was the number one this year in New York.
Oh, that's fantastic. Ah. Well, thank you, Roberta, and again, thank you for covering the event, Michelle. I know you've written about it.
That was your host, Graham Kemlow, speaking with our Americas correspondent, Michelle Winner, and Roberta Garibaldi about the latest Food Travel Monitor report.
You're listening to The Travel Writers Show on JAIR 87.8 FM.